Welcome to Blue Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz here with you. And Jules, maybe I shouldn't say on the Sportsnet Radio Network because we're doing a podcast-only edition following a 7-6 Blue Jays extra innings win. We had to boogie on the radio to make way for the velvety voices of Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph. They're the men. But either way, it does mean we were unfortunately relegated to podcast only today, so we can't take your calls, but we can take your texts at 590-590, name and location. There's actually a whole bunch of texts that people have sent in that we didn't get a chance to get to on the air.
As I would imagine, that was a crazy game show all the way to the end. And for us too, right? Not super common for us to have to just dash out of the studio like
it's
that,
true.
But it's for a good cause, and we understand, and happy that we still get to do this and get to the texts as well. There is a lot to talk about from that game.
It's funny because I will admit my notes were, the vibes were bad, okay? The notes I was making, I was prepared to talk primarily about Nathan Lucas and getting picked off and, you know, runners not being cashed in and a million ground balls and all the things that we would have spoken about had they lost this game. But late in this game, in the latter innings, the Blue Jays down 6-3, and they were down 4-3. They were down 4-2 at different points. The Orioles, they kind of came back, and the Orioles got two more runs late, and it kind of felt like maybe that was going to be it. But then, of course, they down 6-3, managed to come back, tie the game at 6, including a clutch hit from Bo Bichette, an RBI single for Bo to get aboard to tie the game at 6. And then when the game goes to extras, kind of thought to yourself, okay, well, Heinemann pops up. Are they going to be able to get the runner advanced from second, the automatic runner, the ghost runner, whatever you want to call it? And then clutch hits, not only from Ernie Clement, who was 4-for-5 today, but also from Miles Straw, who continues to play really, really well. Even Nathan Lucas redeeming himself by sending the game to the bottom of the 10th inning with a sliding grab out there in relief of Anthony Santander in right field. A lot of really impressive individual moments late in this game, basically all of them coming in the 8th inning or later.
Yeah, it's funny, show, because we have spoken a lot about the little things, and it's something that over these last couple of games against the Orioles, the Blue Jays seemed to stray a little bit from their identity, you know, of being a sound defensive team, paying attention to the details, especially when it comes to base running and things along those lines. We saw a little bit of the same trends early on, and that is, you know, the inability to cash in with runners in scoring position. So much of that all through this this series. And you're right, Joe, that at one point there, you kind of start making your notes and you start thinking about the road trip as a whole. So many missed opportunities for the Blue Jays. Yeah. And this looked like another one that would have just slipped away from them, a winnable game that just doesn't go their way. But they locked in. They really did in those final innings. And that hit by Miles Straw, just an infield single to cash in a run there, kind of really shows you how much of the little things Straw has been doing right and just absolutely booking it out of the batter's box to beat the throw, cash in the winning run. You and I spoke a little bit about this pregame show, but he's just looking like the ultimate bench player. And everything that John Schneider has asked of Straw has been delivered. And again today with a heroic hit to help the Blue Jays to this win and kind of salvage the road trip a little bit, I would say. Not a lot going the Blue Jays' way early on against New York. They kind of pick it back up against Boston, and then it's looking like a weird one in Baltimore with the rain out and everything. But you leave Baltimore with a win coming home, you're pretty happy with that.
Yeah, so 4-5 is their record on the road trip, which I guess in a vacuum is not ideal, obviously. But against the division, especially, and you and I had done Jays Talk following the Mets series, and obviously you get swept by the Mets in New York, not ideal. So you go 0-3 to start this road trip. Then you take 3-4 against the Red Sox, like you're saying. The rainout removes one game from the road trip. It allows you to reorder the bullpen, kind of. But I suppose that was the case for the Orioles as well. So it went both ways, as we saw yesterday in game one of this mini two-game series. But I think I'm with you. Like, the idea of coming home with a 4-5 road trip, but also 4-2 against the division, I think you take that. I said to you last week at the end of the third game we had done, on the Sunday that for it to be considered successful, and I mean, we were counting the extra game that got rained out, obviously, at that point, right? I think we had both said 4-3 was kind of like the bare minimum, and they went 4-2. I mean, I think you take that, all things considered, and now you have a tough series, I think, coming up against the Braves, and the Braves have been scuffling, don't get me wrong, but I mean, there's a chance that Spencer Strider will actually replace Bryce Elder in the rotation on the Wednesday of this coming three-game series. You're already going to face Spencer Schwellenbach, who has been one of the better pitchers in Major League Baseball. And, you know, I think you still want, I mean, they scored 7 runs today. It's definitely a positive. They got a home run from Alejandro Kirk, which is pretty impressive as well. But it's just, I think you do want to see a little bit more from the offense, just a little bit more consistently. Like, there's a text here in the text line, and I totally feel this. It's from Russ in Toronto, and it just says, I think I'm getting sick of small ball. More slug from the Jays would be nice. I feel you, man. Like, I do. And I'm not trying to take away from anything from the result today. I still want to talk about Hoffman. Got to talk a little bit more about Bo Bichette and Ernie Clement. Like, there's some real positives to come out of this game, absolutely. But I think I still would like to see a little bit more power. Like, you know, I do the, and you do this too, the out-of-town scoreboard checks during the games, right, Jules? And, you know, we're looking around all sports. Like, today we're looking at the Masters, certainly. Like, go Corey Connors. But I often look at the other scores around baseball, and it's like, Jung-Hoo Lee hits a 3-run bomb, his second of the day. Santiago Espinal, our old pal, has a 2-run single for the Reds with one out. Like, Michael Garcia has a 2-run double for the Royals. Like, it would just be nice. To Russ's point, it would be nice for the Jays to swing the bat and score more than one run sometimes.
Right.
And again, I think that'll come. I do think that'll come. But it was nice for them to get the timely hit in important situations today. Absolutely not poo-pooing that at all. But I think to Russ's point, I would like to see just a little bit more slugging, I think.
Yeah. You know, Sho, you kind of look at how the road trip went. And for sure, I'm with you that you have to take the good with the bad and kind of be happy about how it ended, because it was far from perfect. And there are several lessons here, right?
Okay.
And not the least of which, the fact that you cannot put runners in scoring position, you cannot load the bases as many times the Blue Jays have and come up empty-handed. And that is where putting the ball in the air really comes into play.
Yeah.
It's that one big swing that clears the bases, that one big swing that is the 3-run homer that really puts up a crooked number on the board and puts the game a little bit more out of reach for opponents. We are seeing the Blue Jays out-hit opponents. We are seeing the Blue Jays, take their walks. And there's a lot of traffic on the bases. The batting average has been higher than opponents pretty much the entire road trip, but they are unable to capitalize. And that is, you know, in large part because of that inability right now to consistently put the ball in the air. I believe it was yesterday, the Blue Jays had 4 double plays
five
double plays, 4 on the ground.
Yeah.
There was that one with Vladdy and Santander in which, you know, Santander hit a fly ball. Vladdy got him, was tagged out on the bases, unfortunately.
I read yesterday that 5 double plays in a single game is tied for the most in Major League Baseball in any game so far this year.
That's not great.
Yeah.
And that's not winning baseball. And unfortunately, when you look at who's coming in with the Atlanta Braves and the fact that you may have Spencer Strider pitching on Wednesday, as well as Schwellenbach, who has been absolutely phenomenal, you may get one of those opportunities per game, Sho. You may get one opportunity to cash in with runners in scoring position, and you need to cash in on those, especially when you have the big bats, the top of the order up. Now, George Springer has been the guy who has done that a little bit more consistently. He exited early today. I believe it was left wrist discomfort is what the Blue Jays are calling it. Still a wait and see with Springer, obviously. I wouldn't be surprised if he got an off day or two here, but yeah.
Well, Arden's saying on Twitter, because Arden's with the team in Baltimore, Arden Zwelling from Sportsnet.ca, of course. Although, how many Ardens do we know? I mean, when I say Arden, I feel like everyone knows who I'm talking about.
It's not like you're saying Ben.
Right, yeah. There's a lot of Bens who work at Sportsnet, you know? Not that many Ardens, right? Arden's saying, x-rays on Springer's wrist returns negative. Blue Jays are considering him day-to-day. So there you go, right? And that's a tough loss. Hey, let me ask you this, just because you brought up Springer, okay? What did you think of the decision not to take him out of the game when he was swinging away.
Like Very clearly.
Yeah, because he takes the hack, right? Takes the first swing, yeah. And then shakes out his left hand, and then clearly in pain, and Jose Ministral, John Schneider, they come out. You can kind of see, like, Jose Ministral, kind of like they're shaking hands. He's, like, gripping his hand, and then touching, like, the palm of his hand, his fingers, and then touching his wrist, and obviously the wrist ended up being what was really bothering him. But then, you know, he says to those two, yeah, I'm good. And mm-hmm. clearly he was uncomfortable, but yeah, I'm good. And, like, you know, it's funny because I think in the moment, I think generally speaking, you give your own players the benefit of the doubt,
yeah,
right? Like you
sure.
kind of go, you lean their way, let's say, right? And all right, so he goes back to the plate. But then the very next hack he takes,
again,
he again rakes out his hand, and they're just feeding Springer like 98-mile-an-hour fastballs, like heaters up top. And I think in that moment, I thought to myself, all right, John Schneider, take his ass out of the game.
It's time
for him to go. Not because you don't care, but there were runners on the bases at that point. It was a pretty big moment in the ball game. You probably would have gotten a better AB from, I would say, literally anyone else. Not because you think Springer is bad, just because he's clearly injured in some way, shape, or form. I didn't love that moment from Schneider, I admit.
It's tough. Listen, you don't love that moment, period, right? It's always such a tough decision, and it's a decision that needs to be made sort of on the fly. You want to trust the batter. Obviously, this is a veteran player. The Blue Jays are big on just believing their guys and believing that they're being honest, but clearly, Springer was uncomfortable there. I will say, and like, this isn't me trying to, you know, make excuses for anyone involved, but it's a tough ask to ask any player, really, any hitter, to come in mid a bat like that. It's such a tough situation, and so with Springer, you kind of just have to believe and take his lead in that situation. It almost also, you know, hurts more when you're swinging and missing, just because there's so much momentum and no contact and no opposing force, let's put it like that. So I'm sure that the swings and misses hurt more in many ways for Springer there. Tough, tough decision, show. And we've seen the Blue Jays be very conservative with those calls. We've seen them be a little bit more aggressive. With Springer, based on what he's done and what he's represented for this team, especially this season, I don't necessarily mind just letting him, you know, have his say on the situation. But obviously it didn't work out.
Right,
and then he came out anyway, right? So
yeah.
Hindsight and all of that, I'm not too concerned about that call right there.
There's a question here from Jeremy in the Beaches on the text line. If Springer goes on the DL or on the IL now, do you think the Jays should call up Varsho to DH like he did in spring training while continuing to rehab? I'll say, I think based on everything we've heard from John Schneider, not only in the spring, but just relatively recent, like this weekend, even the pregames and so on, that they're just not going to start Varsho unless he's just going to be in center field and be your everyday center fielder. That's like the impression I get. I could be wrong on that, but just from everything Schneider has said, and I mean, gosh, Varsho's actually been gone longer than I thought he would have been gone based on the fact that he was playing pretty frequently albeit a DH in the spring. But yeah, I'm guessing to Jeremy's question, Jules, that Varsho's not coming back until he can be in the field basically every day.
Yeah, the Blue Jays are being very categorical with that. Dalton Varsho's main value for this ball club is on defense, and we kind of can see why, right? There's so many of these games that are decided on defensive plays right now for the Blue Jays, and so yeah, he is the difference maker when he is out in the outfield, and I don't expect us to see Varsho in a major league situation unless he is absolutely ready to take over center field and run with it for the rest of the season. That has been the priority from day one. That is why he didn't make break camp with the team. He stayed back. He's still rehabbing. He's not even, you know, out on a rehab assignment yet. So there are still some more hurdles to clear. And that is, it's also hard to argue with that decision, right, Joe? Because we know for a fact that Dalton Varsho is a difference maker when he is at center field every day for the Blue Jays.
There's another text here from Pete in East Vancouver, 590-590, name and location. Pete saying, everyone on TV knew Springer was hurt. The trainer should have stopped the AB. Also, Hoffman rules. That's a great...
Two very different opinions in one text right there.
Very much so. I mean, look, we got to talk about Jeff Hoffman. I don't want to get too sidetracked from the positive after a game like today because, again, a 7-6 extra innings win after you were down 6-3. Like, I can only imagine what Orioles talk is talking about right now, right? It was probably as despondent as we were yesterday and after the Mets series. But, yeah, I mean, look, Jeff Hoffman is disgusting. Like, that is absolutely filthy stuff. I mean, again, I said this to you when we did our very brief edition of Jays Talk Lite, but, I mean, Hoffman goes out there. Let's see. He throws 24 pitches over two innings of work. He throws 18 strikes. He only allows the one hit over two innings of work. And, I mean, as impressive as the bottom of the ninth was, to come on in extra innings with the Manfred runner, the automatic runner, the ghost runner, whatever you want to call it, and for him to only let the runner advance to third and nothing else, that is incredible. And now, Blair and Barker, again, Jules, have spoken about this many times, and I agreed with this the moment they signed Hoffman. I was actually on the air. I was on the air with Roger Lajoie when the news broke about Jeff Hoffman signing. We were doing like a late-night Sportsnet Tonight, and I thought it was really great. I mean, it was something that the Blue Jays really needed to prioritize, some just true swing and miss, some heat at the back end of the bullpen, something it felt like they didn't really have for a couple of years, not just last year. And last year was a weird one because they sold from the bullpen. I mean, he traded away Jimmy Garcia, and then he ends up, his season ends on the IL, essentially, for another team. You re-sign Jimmy, that was definitely a good move, and I think you're seeing it, including in today's ballgame, right, you're seeing it pay dividends. But, and again, this is by no means, I just want to be very clear, slander towards Jordan Romano, but Jordan Romano had always felt like he made it a bit of an adventure, right?
Every time.
And he could throw, he had some gas, right? He could step on the gas pedal and just throw some heat, absolutely. But, you know, a little spotty with the command sometimes, maybe a little too slider happy when you have like a 100 mile an hour fastball, essentially. I think that really got to me. And you and I talked about that in past years. And Romano, one of the better Canadian born closers, pitchers, period, maybe ever, honestly. But Jeff Hoffman, I think, provides a different dimension to the back end of the bullpen that they just honestly haven't had, I dare say, very often at all in, like, Vladdy's career, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, and it's very interesting to see. Again, six outs for him, right? Again, in not a super long span of time. And it's funny to see, you know, inning by inning, what he was throwing. He relied so much on the splitter to get swing and miss in the ninth, comes back out in the 10th. And if he threw one or two splitters, it was too many there.
Right.
And so you can see, like you said, Show, the different dimensions to what Jeff Hoffman can do. We know that he used to be a starter, so he has a little bit more. I do wonder if he, you know, the Blue Jays feel a little bit more comfortable with giving him those two inning pockets because he has done it before as a starter. And obviously there are a million differences from what he did to what he is doing now and how stretched out he actually is and how far he can go. But I do wonder, you know, in terms of even pitch mix and sequencing and things along those lines, what we saw today was a masterclass. There was nothing that Orioles hitters could do because it seemed at points there like they were always hunting for something else, always looking for something else. And that is a huge positive. It's a huge asset for your closer to have and to keep consistently, you know, missing those bats and the big bats. Let's not forget that in the bottom of the ninth there, it was the top of the order for the O's.
Good point.
He allows a double, not great, but then just locks it down after that. So certainly a different look from what we have seen from Blue Jays closers in recent years, and just becoming very, very clear early on here that this is the guy you want on the mound with the game on the line. Very impressive stuff from Jeff Hoffman early on in the season.
Yeah, it's just been generally really fun to watch. It's been so much fun to watch. I mean, you look at the pitch sequencing to the top, the very top of the order, like you're talking about, Jules. So Gunnar Henderson comes up as the first batter in the bottom of the ninth. He goes slider, four-seamer, and then he gets him to strike out on the splitter. He gets Rutschman does get on base, to your point, the double off the splitter as well. Ryan O'Hearn comes up on six pitches. He gets him to strike out on the four-seamer. And then bottom of the ninth, he gets Jordan Westbrook to fly out on a sinker. And then you're right. I mean, you look at the bottom of the 10th, Cedric Mullins comes up, two pitches. He gets him to ground out again on the splitter. Tyler O'Neill, three pitches to Tyler O'Neill. He strikes him out with a four-seam fastball. And then Ramon Laureano is the final out of the game. And he goes four-seam fastball, 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 and then gets him to strike out looking on the slider. I have no idea what Ramon Laureano was looking for on that pitch. Yeah. It was a 90.7 mile an hour slider, essentially right down the middle. And he just clearly was looking for something else.
And that is the beauty of having a guy who, one, can throw those breaking balls for strikes, although maybe he got away with one there.
Sure.
And you kind of look at the rest of, or the other pitches in that at bat, a lot of four-seamers, and he topped out at 99 there. He was challenging Ramon Laureano, who has not had a great start to the season, but he is really just throwing those pitches a little bit up in the zone and daring Laureano to go after one with a runner on, right? Because at that point, obviously, we were in extras, so there was an automatic run in. I believe that runner was already in third base by that point.
Yeah.
And Hoffman is just pitching with confidence, really, really aggressive in the zone, got ahead of most batters he faced, and that makes a difference. It really does, especially that late in the game with a narrow lead, you know, the entire ballpark rooting against you, all of that. You can see how locked in he was. Pardon me, and the fact that he closed it out is really, you know, just more evidence of how much Jeff Hoffman has exceeded in this role of closer.
You don't often get your closer getting the walk-off interview for Sportsnet TV. You know, it's like it's usually a position player, like for the most part. But Hoffman was so nasty today.
Such a good point.
He got the walk-off interview with Arden out there at Camden Yards, which is pretty cool. So great stuff from Hoffman. And, you know, I'm curious to see what the usage looks like for him going forward. Because you're right. Like, I think he definitely has the ability to throw more than one inning, as we've seen more than one occasion very early on this season. But you also don't want to be throwing him two innings every single time. You know what would help with that, though? Scoring a couple more runs to give him a bit
more of a
cushion. Yeah, that would be very nice. Let's talk a little bit about Bo Bichette. And I see a couple of texts here, Jules, on the text line. Again, 590-590, name and location. This is from Rob in Woodstock. And there's another one here I want to get to about Bo as well. But Rob asking, how would the Vlad contract done? What do you think the chances are of Bo Bichette deal getting done? And what kind of money do you think it would take? There's another one here from Brian in Oshawa. Hey, guys, do you think the Blue Jays will sign Bo Bichette to a long-term extension, like maybe a 7 or 8 year extension? Thanks. Love the show. And appreciate your text, guys, Rob and Brian. And look, I think the questions about Bo are always very interesting. I mean, today, first of all, and we were talking earlier about, you know, Bo, and is he going to be clutch? Is he not going to be clutch? And thankfully, he does come through in the clutch to get this game tied at 6. By the way, also, just Bo doing this is not a new, observation about Bo, Jules. But it was the single in the third inning, right? So Cade Povich throws a 93 mile an hour fastball in, and he was trying to get it more in, I think. And I think it was decently on the inside, but still, I think he left it out more in the zone than he wanted to. And Bo gets his hands on it. But I just love watching Bo get his hands through pitches like that, especially pitches that are on the inside. And he's always been able to turn on those pitches. But now that he's healthy, it just feels like he's been doing it a lot more. And I think especially this season, I think I've seen him do it a lot more frequently, which is just honestly nice to see. Because last year, he couldn't hit squat, right? I mean,
yeah.
And last year he was injured, and there were probably some extenuating circumstances outside of the injury going on with him, and which he has acknowledged right during the spring. But I mean, it was tough because especially when Bo, he had the hit, and then he comes up with some big moment later on in the game, could not cash runners in after yesterday's ball game. Is the final out of the game. He still went 3 for 5 with an RBI, but, you know, because he came up with two runners on and the game on the line and he didn't cash them in, I think people were sending texts about how they didn't believe he was clutch. But, I mean, definitely good for him to get back in people's good graces by cashing in the game-tying run there, the RBI single in the 8th.
Yeah, just Bo at his best. And when he is at his best, he's just getting to those pitches that are maybe just below the zone or just in the black there. And driving them, right? It's line drive after line drive, using the whole field. And that is when also the clutch element will show up, because he is not trying to do too much. He is not trying to be the type of hitter that he is not. And that is definitely what we saw today show. And Sportsnet broadcast on television had a stat at one point there. He entered this this game hitting, I believe, 429 in the seventh inning or later with, you know, a whole bunch of RBIs to go with that. So you can see that he's locked in. He is he definitely understands the assignment. He understands what is required of him. The Blue Jays have played a ton of these close games, right, of late. So, yeah, I don't mind having Bo Bichette up at that point, and I trust that he will deliver. It may be at a higher clip than the your average major league player, and that's not all that he's doing.
Sure.
You kind of see it on the other side as well. He's playing very good defense. He's playing defense like we haven't seen Bichette play.
It's not something he's always done, right?
There you go.
Yeah.
So he's obviously investing in that as well. He understands that that is a big part of his game, and that is going to be a big part of free agency if he gets there, right? Is the ability to hold it together and to make those plays at short, which he has more often than not this year. As for what kind of contract he will get, I have no idea, Sho. I think you have some comps that you like to use.
I do.
It's going to be a very, very interesting free agency if Bo gets there.
I think there's a much better chance that the Blue Jays sign Bo to a long-term contract because Vladdy is under contract, you know, if that makes sense, right? And I know some people might hear that and scoff because, you know, like, do the Blue Jays really want to spend, like, close to $1 billion on two players? Like, that's a good question, right? I don't know if the answer to that question is a slam dunk yes, but I felt that while Vladdy was unsigned, and if he was really going to go test free agency, that Bo was also more likely to not return. Because I know Bo is a little more, you know, like taciturn, quiet, stern, very like strong but silent type, right? He's always been that guy versus Vladdy is like the complete diametrically opposed, always smiling no matter what and joking around to the point where people sometimes don't even like it, truthfully, right? I don't really care. You can do whatever you want, honestly.
I love it.
I don't know. It just, because they're such different people and Vladdy was so vocal about wanting to stay here and Bo just... And to Bo's credit, he has said, I want to stay here and win a World Series with Vladdy. I want to stay here for the rest of my career. And that's a big goal of mine. But he doesn't say it quite as often and never says it in interviews, right? He only ever says it to, like, reporters in the clubhouse, for example. So I think that's why you don't really talk about it as much. But I think now that Vladdy is signed to Brian and Rob's points, I think there's a much better chance that he also avoids free agency or at the very least sees what's out there a la Aaron Judge and tests things. You mentioned the comps I like to bring up. I mean, the comp I think for me that makes the most sense is Corey Seager, because Corey Seager, when he left the Dodgers, he signed for 10 years, $325 million with the Texas Rangers. Now, I think at the time, because Corey Seager had some injury issues, if you recall, he was probably viewed as a better defender, I think, than Bo. Maybe a slightly better offensive player than Bo in terms of hitting for power, because I think the most home runs Bo's ever hit in a single season is 29, which is, you know, it's good. Don't get me wrong, but I think Corey Seager was always viewed as having a slightly higher offensive ceiling. It's just the injuries were always the big woes for him, and he came up at a time where money, I think, was being allocated to other people for Los Angeles, right? The Rangers needed a shortstop to go out, and they pay him $1 bazillion, essentially.
Yeah.
But 10 years, $325 million, he's getting paid $32.5 million a year. I feel like if you're Bo's camp, you probably are looking at all of the recent signings. I think you start with Corey Seager, who I think signed that deal in 22. But he was, my point also for that is that he's the same age. Bo was, I think, 27 right now. Corey Seager, 27 when he signed that deal. So I think that's my favorite comparison. It might be a little bit less if you are the Blue Jays or Bo's camp. They believe it's like a little bit less. But I have a hard time believing, with inflation being what it is and contracts just always seemingly going up and up and up, and he's a shortstop, which is a premium position, that the number for Bo, I'd be surprised if it didn't start with a 3. Let's put it that way. I don't know if it starts with a 4, but I'd be surprised if it didn't start with a 3. Also, no shortstop in Major League Baseball has a contract that starts with a 4. Nobody.
Yeah.
Like, not a single person. And maybe Gunnar Henderson resets that market at some point, but I'm not sure Bo is that guy. I don't think.
It's all going to depend, I guess, on the market, right, Sho? And if there is one team that is willing to pay and maybe you get a little bit of a bidding war going, you may get a little bit higher than what was anticipated. It is possible.
Right.
But Bo is not closing the door on the Blue Jays.
Right,
and he's not closing the door on signing an extension. And frankly, I believe that winning will go a long way with that. So if the Blue Jays can string together some wins, you kind of stop thinking about contracts as much and you start thinking about the possibilities, you know, the postseason, and Vladdy is now here and Santander is turning a corner, hit another double today. So we're seeing that things are starting to look up offensively. Bo has been hitting, obviously. You get the power involved. You string some wins together. Stop worrying so much about contract talks, and then maybe that, in a weird way, increases the Blue Jays' chances to get this done ahead of free agency, just because, yeah, you start to envision what this team could look like, not just in 2025, but beyond, and the potential and the possibilities makes it a little more inviting for a guy who is, you know, pretty set on winning as much as possible.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to look at all of the comps of recent shortstop contracts, right? Not just Corey Seager. I mean, Willy Adames just signed, but, you know, Adames was a little bit... He's also such a bizarre player. Like, I'm a big fan of Willy Adames, but he's a bizarre player in that he's 29, but has great defense and can hit for power, but because he's a little older, I'm using air quotes here when I say only, he only signed for $185 million. I think Bo is probably getting a little bit more than that because he's younger than Willy Adames, but I mean, that's probably the floor, I would probably say, for Bo. You're probably looking at the Trey Turner contract, which was a pretty big one. Xander Bogaerts, pretty big one when he signed with the Padres when he left Boston. So those are probably all, probably to a lesser extent, Dansby Swanson. I think Bo is probably viewed as a little bit, has a higher ceiling than Swanson does. So these are all recent shortstop contracts that I think you probably just slap them all together and you average them out or with like money in terms of AAV over years. But yeah, I think there's a good chance Bo does return, especially now that Vladdy's under contract. I'll get to two more things before we take a break, but say goodbye. I'm used to taking breaks because we are on the radio when we do this, but we're doing a podcast-only edition today. But before we say goodbye, two more things. Alejandro Kirk hitting the home run today, his first home run of the season, Jules. I mean, a slight hang on the breaking ball right at the bottom of the zone, probably just didn't quite dip below the zone, and he smashes his first home run of the season. Kirk probably at least a little happy the Camden Yards left field wall got moved in a little bit, right?
Oh, yeah. Not sure if that would have been a homer otherwise.
Yeah, okay. 389 feet. Like, that's probably not a home run in a lot of ball. I haven't checked, but I'm guessing it's not.
Actually, 30 out of 30.
Well, really? Oh, wow. Okay, so it must have gotten hit to a part of the ballpark, like, right where the walls, you know, maybe there's a little divot in the wall somewhere. Yeah. I admit it didn't look that deep when he hit it live. And hey, good for that. It's 30 for 30, though. I'll say this for Kirk, though, Jules. And you tell me if I'm like way off base on this. Okay. I think he's worn it a bit because of the poor hitting up until this point. Hit another hit later in the game, of course. And I think deservedly so, because he was just hitting into a bazillion double plays, right? But the ball has been coming off the bat harder than ever. The bat speed is quicker than it has been in years. So I have to think, if he keeps this up, as long as maybe he's not batting like fifth, for example, right? The results will come. And I think there's a texture in the text line from Jackson in Montreal. Give Kirky a break. 250 with elite catching is good enough for the 8-hole on a winning team. I think that's fair.
Agreed. 100%.
I think it's totally fair, right? I think as long as he's not being put in a position where he has to hit 5 or 6, I think I'm probably fine with him still getting the majority of playing time over Heinemann. And I mean, he's going to, because even though Heinemann's been very good, today notwithstanding, although he didn't play too much today, you know, I'm not sure you're ever going to see anything more in a 7-game week. I'm not sure you're ever going to see anything more than instead of Kirk going 6 games and Heinemann going 1 game, anything more than what, like Kirk going 5 games and Heinemann going 2 games in terms of 7 games in 7 days.
Yeah. And this is why the Blue Jays signed Alejandro Kirk to the deal that they did. And the at-bats were very good today, show. He was making contact with some tough, tough pitches, controlling the strike zone, seeing a ton of offerings from opposing pitchers, kind of what, you know, led him here and led him to success in the first place. So maybe this is Kirk turning a corner a little bit. And I agree with you that we still haven't seen enough to warrant Kirk hitting too high in that lineup,
but
the Blue Jays may have found a nice compromise here, a nice pocket of offense with Kirk. It's not just the power. It's also the fact that Kirk is always going to be a contact hitter first, and that is also what he showed today. He showed that he's seen the ball well and that he is going after those tough pitches. He is fouling them off, you know, putting opposing pitchers in some uncomfortable situations, and the results followed. The results were there. That pitch that he hit out, yes, it clipped the zone for sure, but it wasn't necessarily a bad pitch.
No, I agree.
And it was two strikes. So it was really a matter of having a good two-strike approach, staying with it, and then lifting in the air. Pretty good. And if the Blue Jays can get more just like that out of Kirk, they'll be pretty happy with where they are.
Yeah, two hits for Kirk today, and both of them were pretty big. The home run and then the RBI double to score Jimenez when they were coming back from being down 6-3. So well done for Kirk. Again, I'm not arguing for him to be hitting like cleanup all of a sudden, mm-hmm. right? I think that would be a mischaracterization of like what he is, I think, ultimately. And I think too, I remember I had this conversation with Caleb Joseph, right before the season started. And of course, Caleb, a former catcher himself here at Sportsnet, now working for us on the broadcast. But Caleb was talking about how it's a simple truth that if you're a catcher and you're expected to be like the quote unquote primary catcher, not like a 1A to 1B when Jana was here, but if you're like the main catcher and you're going to catch like 110 to 115 games, the truth is for any catcher, whether your name is JT Realmuto or Will Smith or Salvador Perez or whoever, you are going to see a little bit of a fall off in your offense. So I think to Jackson's point, Jackson from Montreal on the text line, I think if you're characterizing Kirk as a 250 batter in the eight hole and he remains being an elite defensive catcher, an elite game caller, I think you're more than happy with that.
You have to be, yeah. The problem is that we weren't seeing a little bit of a dip, right?
Early
on
dip.
In the
you're
season,
right. Fair.
Things were not going well, period. But yeah, this was definitely, you know, potentially the start of a little bit of a better stretch for Kirk. And we know that that's possible, too.
Yes.
We have seen that as well.
Okay, before we go, Jules, let's get to, like, one relatively negative thing, I guess, because I don't want to completely ignore the things the Blue Jays maybe did to put themselves in the hole today. And, I mean, there were some more errors today. Bo and Vladdy not making some great plays late in the game that led to the Orioles taking the 6-3 lead. And, of course, they came back from this, and Bo in particular having some good starring moments in terms of roles in the comeback win. But, you know, the Nathan Lucas, him entering the game as a pinch runner and then getting picked off by Adley Rutschman and getting caught in the rundown, that's tough. Like, that stuff. You can't, for a team that is so run prevention heavy, right?
Yes.
Like, we've used that term, so often to see so many self-inflicted mistakes, especially on the base paths, which is an issue that dates back to last year. That's not just a 2025 issue. This is like an issue that has existed
for
some time now. I understand why people will be frustrating because it feels uncharacteristically poor, defensively at least, whereas the base running thing feels like, unfortunately, kind of in their character, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it feels like much of the issues of the last 48 hours and even, gosh, the final game in Boston were entirely self-inflicted. And yeah, I mean, there are a bunch of texts here about that, Jules. I mean, like Jay from Regina, Blue Jays continue to make errors on the base paths. Professional baseball players that don't know baseball 101 actions. I love Lucas, but that was an absolute rookie play. Daniel from Acton. BNB said on Friday that Schneider, the manager, said on Friday, when is Schneider, the manager, or the executive, the team leadership, going to step up and send down either the 24th, 25th, or 26th man to make a point about making dumb mistakes when they are substituted into the lineup, causing dumb outs? There's some funny ones here, like JJ in Toronto. Funny how baseball works. We probably should have won yesterday. They probably should have won today. Definitely need to clean up the basics. Sloppy. Same from Forbes, who's often a great texter as well. A mirror image of yesterday's game. The Orioles had no business winning yesterday. The Jays had no business winning today. It's just, I think a lot of texts along those lines. Nico from Winnipeg, great team win, but we have to clean up the base running blunders, have to be disciplined on the path. And then, yeah, I mean, Sean Julia, Dan from Cole Harbor. I know Barker says benching doesn't work in the big leagues, but these mental errors can't continue, which is true. I mean, you can clean up these things.
Yes.
Absolutely. But I think it starts with the team leadership. It starts with Schneider. Like, I'm not saying they have to be punitive every single time it happens, but you got to do something to make sure that you're not needlessly putting yourself behind the eight ball all the time.
Yeah, we've seen a ton of mental mistakes recently. And to your point, Joe, they don't happen necessarily all that often, especially on defense. Base paths have been a different story. And with Nathan Lucas today, absolutely unacceptable. You cannot, at that point in the game, with so much on the line, be caught in between like that. And let's not forget that that was his second base running mistake in a handful of days. He also, you know, interfered with Trevor Story for what ended up being
when he slapped him on the leg.
That's right. That's an interference.
Like,
why? Why indeed? Yeah. There was no point. There was no reason to do that. And so those are things that, at the very least, warrant a talk, at the very least. And we saw John Schneider speak post-game yesterday and kind of defend Bowden Francis and say, listen, Francis pitched pretty well. We just committed a bunch of errors around him and we couldn't hold on to anything, really. And so there's at least that understanding, and now it is very much on manager and coaching staff to clean that up and to make sure that they're keeping these players honest a little bit, because the amount of times that it happened during this road trip show, that is not winning baseball, and that very well might come back to bite you later on.
Yeah, exactly. I just feel like when it comes to defense, and again, like I said, you can clean those things up, but when the team is not hitting well, at least hitting for power on offense, you have to make all the plays in the diamond and essentially take the outs when you get them, right? Because if you're not hitting, even if you're making every play on the defense, on the defensive end of the ball, you're making all the plays perfectly base running wise, the margins are still, when you're not hitting, are so slim, right? They're so incredibly slim. And then on top of that, you're now committing a bunch of needless, dumb errors, whether it's defensively and not making catches that should be made, or letting balls bang off your glove, or again, on the base pass. It's just, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if the three-peat for the team gold glove is gonna necessarily happen again this year. There's a lot of time for that to turn around, but you do want that to turn around sooner rather than later. Jules, good stuff today. That was a fun kind of impromptu podcast-only edition of Jay's Talk. I look forward to... Are we back together next week? Are we
Sunday.
Doing it again?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Not on Saturday.
On Saturday, you know what I'm doing on Saturday?
Okay.
And you can edit this out if it's not okay for all audiences, but
okay.
Blake Murphy and I are going to drag brunch.
Oh, okay.
On Saturday afternoon.
So
it will be fun.
A nice team building exercise.
Exactly. Okay. That's what we're going for. A little bit of a celebration, a little bit of chemistry building moment. Absolutely.
Are you excited for your first... Your I don't want to call it the maiden voyage on Jay's Talk Plus, because you technically did it already when Vladdy had signed the contract earlier in the week. But, I mean, you're going to be doing it. Blake, also, no rest for the wicked for Blake. I mean, today, Sunday, played their final game of the regular season. He's going to wrap it up with Bonner tomorrow, being Monday. And then you and him are just right in the saddle on Tuesday. Yeah, I don't understand how he does it. But are you excited, though? I'm excited for you, honestly.
I'm very excited. I think this is going to be a ton of fun. Obviously, I get along with Blake, and he's built something so special with this show.
He has.
I'm very, very happy that I get to, you know, contribute in small ways, whatever it may be. It's kind of a situation where I am just happy to be there, but, you know, it's going to be fun. It's definitely a new chapter in my career as well. So, yeah, let's get off on the right foot here. Tuesday, that is when it starts.
Just be sure to ask Blake a lot of leading questions. You know, really tough leading questions on your first day.
Yeah, that's great advice. Thank you. I'll tell him that that was your advice.
Don't tell him that comes from me. Tell him Blair said that, okay? Don't tell him I said that.
Deal.
That is the great Julia Kreutz. I'm Show Ali. Blue Jays Baseball brought to you by the local family-owned Crown West Control Centers in Lévis, Quebec, and West Quebec City. Crown is proud to be Canadian-owned and operated since 1986. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local Crown West Control Center, or visit crown.com. Crown, Canada's number one rust protection. For Julia Kreutz, Ben Schulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, I am Show Ali, and that does it for us. An audible for tomorrow. I will be handling Jay's Talk solo tomorrow, Monday, live from the ballpark, though Blair and Barker will be still doing their regular show tomorrow during the day. I believe as tomorrow is Vladdy's official press conference with all the pomp and circumstance down at the Dome, B&B will actually be starting an hour earlier, so they'll be on from 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, Monday, as they will carry the Vladdy presser live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, the radio network, and Sportsnet Television. But until then, everyone, have a great Sunday. We'll talk to you later. We'll